I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. President Obama has named three people he wants to be part of his new national security team: Chuck Hagel for Secretary of Defense, John Kerry for Secretary of State, and John Brennan to head up the CIA. Hagel's nomination has sparked some controversy from the right and from the left over comments about Iran, Israel, and gays. Brennan's job overseeing counterterrorism for the administration has raised questions about drone strikes. Kerry looks like he'll sail more smoothly through the confirmation process than Susan Rice would have. Her name was floated last year until she withdrew from the process. So what do these names say about Mr. Obama's second term and his vision for foreign policy and national security? We begin our conversation with Michael Hirsch. He's chief correspondent for National Journal. Previously, he was a senior editor and national economics correspondent for Newsweek, based in Washington, D.C. And Michael Hirsch, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
So does this signal a new foreign policy for President Obama?
Well, no, I think it's more of a continuation of the direction that he's been going in. What dominated his first term was the drawdown in Iraq and what is going to be the withdrawal by 2014 in Afghanistan, a very scaled-down U.S. military presence, reduction of the Pentagon budget. I think in John Kerry and Chuck Hagel, two of his old comrades from the Senate, he has two men who were in perfect alignment with his views about a very, very stringent approach to American force overseas essentially, a drawdown.
Do you think, though, these choices either repudiate neoconservatism or close the book on that form of foreign policy?
It's a good question. I'm not sure how to phrase it. Certainly it is a repudiation of the neoconservative thinking, which called for a projection of U.S. might, and indeed, the neoconservatives were among the chief champions of the war in Iraq, which Obama opposed and Hagel opposed, defying his own party and his own president. There's no question that Hagel and Obama stand for, a very different view of U.S. power. Whether it closes the book on neoconservatism, that might be going too far, because the neoconservatives, have proved to be perhaps more durable than many of us thought they would be.
But it is interesting that he chose Chuck Hagel and John Kerry, both of whom actually fought in wars. They're both Vietnam veterans. Does that signal something different as well?
It does, and it's interesting to go back to the debate over the Iraq War. The dividing lines were often between those who had been in wars, had actually experienced combat, and those who had not. Of course, those who had not included all the senior members of the George W. Bush administration. And you have in Kerry and Hagel two men who have said themselves many times how important and profoundly influential their Vietnam experience was in shaping their worldview. Hagel told me and other reporters over the years that he swore to himself during the Tet Offensive, when he was an infantryman, that if he was ever in a position of responsibility, he would make sure that we didn't get into a war unless we absolutely had to. And, of course, Kerry became famous on the national scene for appearing before the same Senate Foreign Relations Committee that he now chairs and asking, his much-quoted question, how can you ask someone to be the last man to die for a mistake? So there's no question that this shapes what these two men do. In particular, for Kerry, an aide of his told me that just because of his Vietnam experience, Kerry's the kind of guy, as Secretary of State, who's going to, get on the plane and go for an extra round of diplomacy, even when everyone else says that it won't work, because he's so acutely aware of the dangers of war.
Do you think that reflects a national war weariness in this country as well?
I think it does. If you look at the polls, clearly the Iraq War has been for some years now very unpopular, especially as we've learned that the reasons for going to war did not stand up to scrutiny. Saddam's supposed weapons of mass destruction and links to al-Qaeda, which did not pan out. So I do think that this is in keeping with the public mood, and I think that Obama has paid very close attention to that.
It's clear that Senator Chuck Hagel is going to have, I guess, the toughest time in this nomination process already. There are some very outspoken critics about comments he's made about the Jewish lobby, some of his comments about Israel, some of his comments about a gay ambassador that goes back a number of years. How hard a time do you think he's going to have?
I think it's going to be a very tough fight. I think he will be confirmed in the end, but you know, without a lot of Republican support, which really points up how alienated he has become from the Republican Party. I think he's going to spend a lot of time at his hearings trying to explain away some of the comments he's made in the past, which, I mean, Hagel's great strength, I think, is that he's very blunt and speaks his mind, but that's also his weakness because it's gotten him into trouble. So he's going to have to, really disavow the comments he was quoted as saying about gays. He's going to have to probably disavow some of his previous positions on Iran and stand with Obama's administration's policy, which is to mount a very tough sanctions campaign against Iran. So it's not going to be easy.
Well, you can find quotes on anybody, and certainly you can find quotes on Chuck Hagel, both this comment about the Jewish lobby, but also quoting from a book that he wrote about the special and historic bond between Israel. Do you think he'll be able to answer his critics, or do you think he said something that will forever be held against him?
No, I do think on the question of Israel, and of course the neoconservatives led by Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard have been really, really teeing off on Hagel about this. But I think if you look at his record and you look at the number of Israeli officials that are now coming out and saying, you know, they consider Hagel friendly to Israel, a strong supporter of Israel, I do think that issue is likely to be neutralized.
What about John Brennan? And there are questions probably coming more from the left than from the right, but questions about drone strikes, his involvement in harsh interrogations or torture, if you will. Does he have some answering to do?
He does, and I think, you know, remember Brennan was supposed to be nominated to head the CIA at the beginning of the first term and bowed out because of some of these questions about how involved he was in the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques that the Bush administration used. Now, Brennan did say that he was against waterboarding, but he supported some of these other techniques. And then there is this question about Brennan's oversight of the targeted killing program, which has been, you know, somewhat controversial. So I think it's not going to be easy because a lot of this stuff is classified, but he's going to have to answer some very tough questions.
What are these three? And it's interesting. There are three white guys. Is that a big deal? Is that something we should make something of?
I think it should be noted, particularly in the case of Hagel, because the other main candidate for the defense job was Michelle Flournoy, who is very highly thought of, who during the election campaign was really the top spokesperson for the Obama campaign on national security. And this is seen as something of a snub to her. We don't know whether she's going to get offered any job now. Susan Rice, obviously, that was supposed to be the chief woman in Obama's cabinet, but her nomination to Secretary of State, which was kind of floated out there, was withdrawn. So you do have this very striking sense that this president has surrounded himself with a lot of white men. Now maybe Obama, you know, as the first African American president, feels less obligated to have a diverse cabinet because he himself represents diversity. But they're particularly now with the resignation just yesterday of the labor secretary, you don't have any senior women.
How much is, though, the country's foreign policy run out of the White House itself and out of the Obama administration?
Well, it's a good point. It has been run out of the White House, very much so. And that's going to continue. And I think that in Hagel and Kerry, Obama has two people who are going to resign themselves to that, you know, that they are basically going to be the messengers from the White House. Obama has a coterie of people that are very close around him. It's very possible, for example, that his deputy national security advisor, who has been a longtime aide to him, Dennis McDonough, could become the new chief of staff, replacing Jack Lew, who's about to become Treasury Secretary. You can expect to see it run out of the White House, and this will be, an Obama doctrine foreign policy. But it will also be, a Hagel, Kerry, Biden doctrine as well.
You mentioned Biden. How influential do you think Biden's worldview has been on the president, and even perhaps even on these selections?
Well, I think that Biden has been one of the most influential vice presidents in history on policy. I mean, across the board, a lot of different issues, from foreign policy to, you know, now gun control and the budget negotiations. We've seen Biden playing a major role. But particularly on foreign policy, Biden, who was an expert on foreign policy as a senator, really, really helped to shape Obama's view. And in fact, if you look at the approach to Afghanistan now and the move toward a quicker drawdown, that really reflects Biden's views in this big debate. So he has been behind the scenes very, very influential.
Let's talk about the Pentagon budget. And, of course, we've got Congress and the White House negotiating over the debt ceiling and debt. But I'm also thinking about whether Chuck Hagel wants to cut the defense budget. And if he does, how do you think that can be done?
It's not easy.
No, it isn't.
I would say that the number one question about Chuck Hagel, no one questions his integrity, his distinguished, you know, combat record in Vietnam, or his intelligence, for that matter. But the one big question about Hagel is, you know, has he ever run anything like a large organization? And there's nothing larger than the Pentagon. It's just, you know, shot through with vested interests, a $500 billion budget. And he has said that he wants to cut a bloated budget, and that's what Obama wants as well. The question of getting it done, though, against all these vested interests inside the building, in Congress, you know, a lot of every congressman has his pet defense program. It's a very tough thing to do, and that's going to be the single biggest challenge for him.
And certainly after the Korean War, I believe the Vietnam War, even the Cold War, the Pentagon budget was cut, though.
It was, and there was a peace dividend, as I called it, in the 90s as well, that I think, you know, really helped the economy. But as we've seen, you know, in recent weeks, and as we saw a year ago, we have this near stalemate on Capitol Hill between Democrats and Republicans over defense cuts. And of course, the sequestration issue is going to come back again, and that, of course, refers to the Pentagon budget cuts that were to be automatic if the two sides couldn't come to agreement. That's merely been put off by a couple of months for another reckoning, and you can bet that Hagel, if he's confirmed, is going to be right in the middle of that.
Almost out of time here, but do you anticipate then a choppy few months looking ahead in Congress and the White House?
I think it's going to be a couple of pretty choppy hearings on Capitol Hill in the way that you've just outlined, mainly focused on Hagel and Brennan. I think the other nominees are going to sail through pretty easily. That would be John Kerry as Secretary of State and Jacob Lew as Treasury Secretary, which is to be announced today. But on these other issues that really we've seen just temporarily solved, namely the fiscal cliff issue, it's going to be very ugly. Very ugly indeed.
Well, we're going to have to end on that note. Michael Hirsch, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. He's chief correspondent for National Journal. Stay with us, though. Much more to talk about after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Woodmere Art Museum in Chestnut Hill supports WHYY and offers a variety of art classes and workshops for all ages and skill levels. Art making with classes for adults that include painting, watercolor, drawing, collage, mosaics, and Zentangle. Children and teens ages 6 and up can enjoy printmaking, painting, animation, sculpture, and more. All classes taught by renowned local artists. Parking is available. For more information, 215-247-0948 or woodmereartmuseum.org.
I'm Jesse Thorne. In 1985, the band Till Tuesday had a hit video on MTV. Their singer, Amy Mann, had become kind of famous, but she was still broke and she was weirded out by the attention.
You know, people following me back to my $400 a month apartment, I mean, I just found it threatening and creepy.
So she took her career another way. Singer-songwriter Amy Mann, this week on Bullseye from PRI.
Tomorrow night at 9 on WHYY.
3 years ago, a massive earthquake devastated Haiti. Charity workers and reporters came rushing in. But one writer says too many left as quickly as they came, sometimes after doing more harm than good. The author of Farewell Fred Voodoo, A Letter from Haiti, is with us to tell us more. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. As we know now, President Obama has nominated a new national security team for his second term, John Kerry for Secretary of State, Chuck Hagel for Secretary of Defense, and John Brennan to head up the CIA. All three are well known in Washington, Kerry and Hagel from the Senate, and Brennan from his many years in counterintelligence. We're talking about what these nominations say about Mr. Obama's foreign and national security policies. Will they pass the confirmation process? We just said goodbye to Michael Hirsch, and he's chief correspondent for National Journal. Well, let me welcome Daniel Pletka to Radio Times, vice president for foreign and defense policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute. She works on national security matters with a focus on domestic politics in the Middle East and South Asia regions, also U.S. national security, terrorism, and weapons proliferation. She served for 10 years as a senior professional staff member for the Near East and South Asia on the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. And Daniel Pletka, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
And we are about to hook up with Heather Hurlburt, who will be joining us as well. But let me begin with you, Daniel Pletka. What do you make of President Obama's choice for these three to serve in his on his national security team?
Well, I think in the case of each of them, obviously they have some appeal to the president. And, you know, there's traditionally wide latitude given in Washington to any president to choose his team. Unfortunately, I think in Chuck Hagel, the president has chosen somebody who is obviously quite controversial. I imagine, were Chuck Hagel not there, had the president picked somebody a little bit more mainstream for SecDef, we would have seen quite some controversy over Brennan. Mm. And that's, he should be, let's just say he should be grateful to Chuck Hagel for taking all the fire, because I imagine that his confirmation now will be much less difficult. And Kerry, of course, is benefiting from the big kerfuffle over the previous trial balloon, UN Ambassador Susan Rice, who was ultimately withdrawn as a possibility for the State Department because of Benghazi. So all told, not happy times for the president's nominees.
Well, that's interesting. And we will talk about John Brennan on this show, because I think that that's an important part of our conversation. Let me get Heather Hurlburt to join our conversation. And she's executive director of the National Security Network. Her policy work focuses primarily on the politics of U.S. foreign policy, counterterrorism, and the nexus of civilian and military approaches to conflict resolution. She served in the Clinton administration. And Heather Hurlburt, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be back.
Well, let me put to you what I put to Daniel Pletka, which is just your overall response to President Obama's selection for Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, and head of the CIA.
Well, it's fascinating, and I just was able to hear the end of what Danielle was saying, that you have a set of appointments who have amazingly long and bipartisan resumes working in American national security, taking positions that are very well within the mainstream of what Americans tell pollsters they want, and within the mainstream of the debate that we just had in this election, that we had in the previous election. So, you know, it's a set of, on the one hand, very, very mainstream appointments. On the other hand, a set of appointments that really draw a line under the post-9/11 era and have sparked, as Danielle said, an enormous amount of controversy, but coming really from a very small number of groups and individuals, which, you know, if you are sort of not paying attention, you wouldn't know that you have a small but very vocal faction in Washington that that does not like to see the sort of activist military approach of the immediate post-9/11 period go away. But other than that faction, these guys are amazingly non-controversial, frankly.
Well, Danielle Pletka, are you part of that small and vocal faction that Heather Hurlburt just referred to? Go ahead.
I think that's a sweet way to put it.
Okay.
I don't consider the elected representatives of the American people in the United States Senate who have expressed concern about these nominations to be a small but vocal group. But I also think that all of these questions will be aired out. You know, we have a couple of weeks before the inauguration, and I imagine that in the week that follows that, we will see hearings for at least a couple of these nominees, if not all of them, and they will have an opportunity to answer the questions that are being raised, absolutely, by people like me and many, many others, including the editorial page of The Washington Post.
Well, let's take them all apart, and let me go back to you, Daniel Pletka, and let's take Chuck Hagel. What is your objection to, or what are your concerns or even criticisms of his nomination?
I think the problem with Senator Hagel is really... let's put it this way. There are a few problems with Senator Hagel. The first of them is just the real question about why the president would have chosen this man. He has a history of controversial statements on the question of Israel. You know, everybody makes a slip of the tongue. He referred to the Jewish lobby in a way that was offensive. But you know what? I don't want to take that in isolation. Lots of people who talk a lot in public life have been heard to say stupid things that didn't really reflect anything more than a certain incaution. So was that the problem? No. But he has been a very strong advocate against sanctions on Iran, for more engagement with Iran, for engagement with groups that are on the U.S. designated terrorist list like Hezbollah and Hamas. And to boot, on other issues, I just can't see where he and the president jibe. You know, he has an A rating from the National Rifle Association. He voted against the assault weapons ban. He voted against gun show checks. And he has a zero rating from the pro-choice NARAL. He opposed servicewomen being allowed to pay for their own abortions, let alone have the government pay for them. So I don't really get where the two men are in sync.
Well, let me give you a chance to pick up on that, Heather Hurlburt, and let's we'll get to the NRA and NARAL, but let me get your response to what Daniel just said about his belief in engagement with Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas. What do you say?
Well, just on Danielle's last point first, I think many, many Democrats would actually be happy to echo word for word the critique she just made. But the interesting thing is that it's clear from the time they were both in the Senate when they introduced bills on nuclear security and nonproliferation together that the two men do have a profound personal and not ideological, but actually sort of pragmatic, realist approach to the world in common. And I think fundamentally that's the answer to the question of why he was nominated. Now, this has led Hagel to say publicly in a very clear way things that many other people in Washington across party lines think privately about the undesirability of rushing precipitously to war with Iran, the undesirability of and actually, Hagel has said there should be more sanctions on Iran now. He said that just a couple months ago. But the undesirability of piling sanctions upon sanctions for their own sake without a clear long-term goal, and the desirability of doing, frankly, what the Israeli military does and engaging where it's useful for us with Hezbollah and Hamas. And this comes, I think, from the perception that if you are a great power, if you are in fact the greatest military power the world has ever seen, you don't need to be afraid of talking to your enemies. And I think this, you know, just the last point I would make is Senator Hagel is a decorated Vietnam War hero. He saved his brother's life. And he would also be the first enlisted man ever to lead the Pentagon. And that's, you know, really a very profound symbol about American democracy and American participation and how the American dream relates to, you know, even the most elite corners of our national security. And I think that was probably quite irresistible to President Obama.
But do you think it also represents a reluctance to go to war, Heather?
You know, Chuck Hagel, as has been said and as Danielle said, Chuck Hagel is not some hippie peacenik. And he very, very strongly supported the interventions in the Balkans in the 90s. He did vote for the Iraq War, although he later came to believe that it was a mistake. So he's not, he's certainly not opposed to going to war. He's not someone who believes that force is, he is someone who believes that force is a very legitimate part of our toolbox for dealing with the world. But he says that from his personal experience, fighting. He is very thoughtful and slow. Deliberate is maybe a better word about how and where force should be deployed.
And that's Heather Hurlburt. She's Executive Director of the National Security Network. Also with us, Danielle Pletka, Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. And we're getting two different perspectives on President Obama's choices for Secretary of State. That would be John Kerry, Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel, and CIA Head John Brennan, who is currently the White House Counterterrorism Advisor. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Danielle, just a quick follow-up to that. Do you see a place for engagement?
I think everybody sees a place for engagement, and I think it's important to underscore that Barack Obama was elected in 2008 and again last year on a platform of outreach to the Iranians. Now, the truth is that in his first term, he very aggressively tried to reach out to the Iranians, and he was rather rudely rebuffed. The challenge here is not sitting down and talking to people. It's all often mischaracterized that way. I think that the bigger question is, what imprimatur does the United States give when we accept the notion that we should really sit down and talk to terrorist groups like Hamas, like Hezbollah? What signal does it send when someone who has opposed sanctions, not just sanctions now, but sanctions in the past against Iran, is put in a position of power? Certainly we know how the Iranians read it. They've greeted this with great happiness. And let me put it this way. I'm never happy when the Iranians are happy.
What do you think, Heather? And then we'll get to our callers.
Actually, you know, Danielle has really very succinctly laid out the sort of the fundamental difference that there is between the parties that is often obscured by all of this personality-based stuff. And that is, number one, you know, again, when the Israeli military talks to Hamas, does that give it an imprimatur? No, it doesn't. Can we sit down with our opponents and without giving them an imprimatur? Yes, we certainly can. Was that true
Heather,
in the Soviet
Union? Heather, when does the Israeli army sit with Hamas?
Hold on. Yeah, go ahead, Heather, and then I'll give you a chance, Danielle. Go ahead.
Okay.
Just finish your thought.
So, short answer, the Israeli military has had pragmatic contacts with Hamas over the years, continues to do so. You can read a lot about it in the Israeli press. But this is a real and significant difference, and actually something that's good about the Hagel hearings, although I personally would prefer to have a president's nominees given deference, and then we could move on to actually dealing with the issues, one of which is very much trying to get someplace that stops the Iranians from progressing toward having a nuclear weapons capability. But in fact, there is that fundamental difference of view of whether you can sit down with your enemies without giving something away. And, you know, again, there have been two presidential elections, and while I would disagree that there's been some kind of aggressive campaign of engagement, it's certainly true that there were two presidential campaigns fought on a very clear difference of view, and President Obama won both of them.
Go ahead, Danielle Pletka. Then I promise we will get to our callers. Go ahead.
Sure, and I'm sorry I interrupted
you,
Heather.
Okay.
It's really for a question. It's of course, patently untrue that the Israeli government or the Israeli military sits down in any official way with Hamas or Hezbollah. Perhaps they would want to, but I know that Hamas and Hezbollah do not. In addition, we often have indirect contacts with these sorts of groups. In the recent fighting between Hamas and Israel, the Egyptian government mediated between them. We have had mediators, and we have, of course, talked to the Iranians directly on many occasions. That's really not the challenge. The challenge is saying, you can pretty much do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Kill our soldiers in Iraq, attempt to kill our soldiers in Afghanistan, continue your nuclear weapons proliferation, and I will still encourage sitting down with you and moving forward and putting no sanctions in place in order not to interfere with that sit down.
Is it that either or choice, Heather Hurlburt?
I was going to say that's not the foreign policy of the administration that I've been watching for 4 years. It doesn't describe the reality of what's happened. It doesn't describe the reality of the most stringent sanctions regime ever imposed on anyone anywhere being imposed on Iran over the last 4 years.
Against, of course, the president's wishes. He opposed those bills in Congress. So
no,
we should underscore
some
that.
Provisions of some of them, but he did not oppose the sanctions.
Let me get, looks like Tony from Pottstown to join our conversation. And Tony, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I just wanted to say thank you for this conversation today. But I just wanted to comment real quick on the stances of Hagel and Brennan, and showing that, you know, their relation to the former Bush administration and their foreign policy, and how it failed in Iraq and Afghanistan, and how Obama's bringing them in now to accelerate once again that, but on a much more quiet mm-hmm. scale. He's not doing it in the mainstream media saying he's pulling back troops, but again, he's nominating these people. I feel he's accelerating that, and I'll take my comment off the air.
Okay, let me just say to you, Tony, that Hagel was not in the Bush administration.
Okay.
I mean, he's a Republican, but he was not in the Bush administration.
But he was affiliated with them, and going into Iraq the first time, voting for it, and then obviously revoking his stance on it later on. But
right.
that's my comment.
Okay, so fair enough. No, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Danielle, do you want to respond to Tony's comments?
I'm sorry, I really, they weren't actually clear to me, so would you characterize them quickly for me?
I
apologize.
No, that's okay. But perhaps I can put this to her, Heather, and what I hear from Tony is that he sees at least Brennan, and perhaps even Hagel, because he is a Republican, as a kind of holdover from the Bush administration, and doesn't, I guess, see the kind of break with the Bush administration that he's looking for.
Well, what's interesting about that is, of course, that Hagel is noted, and one of the reasons for his troubles with his fellow Republicans is that he so publicly disavowed his previous support for the war. And Brennan, who we haven't talked about, Brennan has trouble with the left because he's perceived as having not done enough to stop torture during interrogations during the Bush administration. But what's really fascinating about both of those, and of course Kerry voted for the war as well, it should be noted. So what's really fascinating about that is that you have these three people who were involved in very real and official ways with the policies of those years, and who each in their own way have come around to saying, no, we feel that this did not achieve the objectives we hoped it would, and we now have some radically changed ideas about how it is you can best achieve the goals that that actually Danielle and I share, and we have quite a lot in common, although I don't think it's going to come out on this topic. But that they, that this really does represent, that it's not often you get to see grown men really change their views and their approach to the world in public, and this, it represents something that the American public as a whole has gone through in the years since 9/11, I would say.
We're almost having a break here, but Danielle, but do you see the Iraq war as kind of a pivotal point in U.S. foreign policy?
I think for some it was. I suspect that for Chuck Hagel, his willingness to review his past positions is a flexibility that is stronger, perhaps, than in some in Washington. But sure, of course, the Iraq War was a really big challenge, particularly prior to the surge, which Senator Hagel chose to oppose, as indeed he opposed President Obama's decision to surge in Afghanistan.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation and our callers. And we are talking about President Obama's choice for Secretary of State, John Kerry, for Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, and to head up the CIA, John Brennan. All three of those very well-known names in Washington, D.C. And we're talking with Danielle Pletka. She's Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. She served for 10 years as a senior professional staff member on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Heather Hurlburt is Executive Director of the National Security Network, and she spent a number of years working in the Clinton administration. And we're taking a very short break, opening up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Yannick Nézet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra perform Ravel's La Valse and the Fifth Symphony of Shostakovich. Also, Leonidas Kavakos performs Shimanovsky's Second Violin Concerto. Tickets at philorg.org or by phone, 215-893-1999. January 16th, 18th, and 19th at the Kimmel Center, showpieces with Yannick Nézet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Barry Lopez is best known for writing about the natural world, but he goes deep into his own inner life in an essay about how he was abused by a pedophile over a period of 4 years and how that affected the course of his life. Lopez's essay about confronting the trauma of sexual abuse is in the January edition of Harper's. We'll talk with him on the next Fresh Air. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. A reporter who was there describes surviving the earthquake in Haiti 3 years ago this week, but also tells us why all the help that came did not help. And the envelope, please, will look at the Oscar nominations. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. We are talking about President Obama's nominations for his national security team and what they say about the president's foreign policies and national security policies for his second term. And again, talking with Heather Hurlburt and Danielle Pletka and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I do want to talk about John Brennan, but let me get Art from Quakertown to join our conversation. Art, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is this. See, I don't understand why Chuck Hagel's getting so much flack. It seems to me as a taxpayer that he's an honest man who isn't tied to a lot of big special interests, and he's going to be level-headed about using our force and not dragging us into a big, long, useless war like Iraq was. It helped drive us into the tank economically. So, Why is he getting so much flack? Why aren't people looking at what he can do to solve our economic problems?
Well, Art, let me toss that first to you, Daniel Pletka. Go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, perhaps for the American people, it's not just about being a good guy. And as far as special interests are concerned, I'm not quite sure what the caller means. Chuck Hagel is on the board of the oil company Chevron, so I think he has some special interests. But I think, personally speaking, I think that people who have served in government need to earn a living after they leave government. So that's not an area of special concern to me, I'll be perfectly frank. I think the questions are very legitimate. And at the end of the day, what happens, whether the president is a Republican or a Democrat, is that his candidates get asked very difficult questions. It used to be that they were pushed through with almost a rubber stamp. But since the 1980s, perhaps the 1990s, they get asked a lot of hard questions, and Chuck Hagel will get asked harder questions than most because he has said more controversial things than most.
Art, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And again, you can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. Heather, let's talk about John Brennan. And do you think he should be asked some hard questions about drones, about enhanced interrogations, and even some of the counterterrorism operations that he's been a part of?
Yeah, I think the Brennan nomination is actually a terrific opportunity to have some really clear discussions and establish some real clarity about where we are going next with counterterrorism policy, and that Brennan is a really interesting character because he is a career CIA person, was very involved at very senior levels in some of the things the CIA did during the immediate post 9/11 period, which have now been disavowed and outlawed by executive order. Brennan has spoken very strongly in favor of trying terrorism suspects in civilian courts, in favor of closing Guantanamo, in favor of doing a number of things that would, he feels, both be more effective counterterrorism policy and more closely align American practice with our Constitution. Now, at the same time, of course, he is the architect of the drone program, which has been, you know, very effective in some ways and has operated really outside of what we think of as constitutional norms of transparency, while you have a number of intelligence analysts starting to raise questions about whether some aspects of it are really effective or whether there gets to be a point where you're targeting too many people, you're targeting too many low-level people, you're having too many civilian casualties. not just for moral reasons, but also for practical ones in terms of not turning a region or a country against you. So those are all really important big conversations that aren't partisan, and this is a great opportunity for us to start having them. What I'm worried about, frankly, is that instead we'll have a bunch of conversations about non-issues like Benghazi instead of really focusing in on those questions, which, you know, as Danielle said, nomination processes and hearings are a chance for the American people's elected representatives to weigh in on the big questions.
I'm curious, Danielle Plaka, what you would want to ask John Brennan about the drone program.
Heather had me until Benghazi.
Okay, well, we'll get to Benghazi, but do the drones first.
Right, no. And that's what I wanted to underscore. You know, I think that she's exactly right. We as a nation have not had a conversation about the use of drones in counterterrorism, and particularly the sort of remote control warfare that has become very popular inside the Obama administration, not just in the White House and at the CIA, but also in the Defense Department. The idea that you can kill people from the sky, that everything should be conducted secretly by special operations without sufficient oversight. I think those are very, very important questions. And I suspect many of us have different perspectives on it, but this is a conversation that has to be aired out.
And do you think a confirmation process is a good place to do that, Danielle?
Absolutely, especially because Congress, in its wisdom, has stopped doing many of the things that we think it ought to do, like passing appropriations bills. Last year, they passed no appropriations bills. So they might as well use their oversight and their confirmation process to actually begin to air out some of the discussions that need to be had in public for the American people.
Heather, do you think if we're talking about the future of conflict, that it will be more drone-based rather than, you know, an Iraq-type war-based intervention?
There's absolutely no question about that. That, you know, ever since then-Defense Secretary Gates quoted General MacArthur and said, you know, anyone who wanted to send an army to stage a land war in Asia should have his head examined. That's been the era that we're going into, and you know, the challenge that we really face is the American people have not had this conversation, have not had the opportunity to understand, you know, what is good and wonderful and a huge technological advance, and frankly a huge advance in security, both for American forces and for civilians in the countries that we're talking about, and what are huge challenges, what are legal, constitutional, moral challenges, but also effectiveness challenges. And that's a conversation that people like Danielle and I, who are lucky enough to do this for a living, have been having. But you know, if our democracy has any meaning, you've got to have that conversation on a broader level.
Well, let's talk about John Kerry. We shouldn't forget that he's been nominated for Secretary of State. And Heather, if I can just go back to you, looking at Hillary Clinton's years as Secretary of State, are those big high heels for him to fill?
You know, that, I love that you say that, because that line originates in the transition from Warren Christopher to Madeleine Albright.
Oh, is that right?
I worked at the State Department, so I love that has now entered the culture.
Right.
I mean, it's one of the things that's very interesting about the Kerry pick is that where you were never going to be able to match the particular brand of domestic and global charisma that Secretary Clinton had, you know, John Kerry has probably met just about every foreign leader there is, has traveled the world, has been preparing for this job for a very long time. And so he'll bring his own brand of global recognition to this. He has a slightly different set of issues that he's really passionate about, and it remains to be seen as well, frankly, what the president, who has been very, very involved in his own foreign policy, what the president's second term priorities are going to be.
What do you think of that that selection, Daniel Plaka? John Kerry, Secretary of State.
I think that of the three nominees we have before us on national security, John Kerry is by far the best and better than the choice that was floated before him. I can't knock John Kerry on experience. He's been the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for a long time. Has he made some bad calls in the past? You bet. He really fell in love with Bashar al-Assad, and I think that was a shame. That said, many people fall in love with the wrong people. Not all of them are vicious dictators, but I think that he will be a decent Secretary of State. I agree he has big shoes to fill in Hillary Clinton. She has been much, much better than I think many of us expected, and really a star in the administration.
But are you saying that he fell in love with Bashar al-Assad as Bush fell in love with Putin when he looked into his eyes? Is that what you're talking about?
An equally stupid way, yes. I think that both men are lacking in appeal. And I think that Kerry's willingness to look past Assad's history, the Assad family history, and his desire to move forward, and really to suggest that Assad was a reformer, something, by the way, that people tell me really informed Hillary Clinton's initial thinking about Assad, was a terrible mistake, and I imagine he's going to be asked about it. On the other hand, I think that he will be confirmed with great ease, and I hope he will be a good secretary.
Do you see it that way, Heather?
Well, given the large numbers of people on both sides of the aisle who were, frankly, desperately hoping that Bashar al-Assad would be a reformer, It'll only be the very junior senators who weren't around at the time who will be able to ask that question without embarrassment. Also the ones that don't have a record of saying embarrassingly nice things about Muammar Gaddafi. But he'll be confirmed. It'll be very easy. It'll be kind of an old-fashioned Senate love fest of the kind that Danielle and I remember, but you don't see too many of anymore. And then we'll see what comes after that.
Because the Senate, what, loves one of their own? Talk about a love fest, right?
Loves one of their own, because John Kerry, he may not be the best loved member of the institution ever, but he's been around a long time and appreciates and it as an institution, has worked a lot with members of both parties, and because, look, you know, every senator sees him or herself as able to take that major a role on the world stage. And so when you appoint a senator to a job, you are affirming for the other 99 their similar worth and value.
And that's Heather Hurlburt, who joins us along with Danielle Pletka. And you can join us as well. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Danielle, let me go back to you and actually go back to Chuck Hagel, because I heard Elliot Abrams on All Things Considered this week calling Chuck Hagel an anti-Semite. And to me, that's a very, very serious charge. How do you see Chuck Hagel? Do you think he's an anti-Semite?
I don't know. I don't want to characterize Elliot's views. I've already been asked once on NPR to do that.
Oh, is that right?
But, yes. But, look, we talked about this comment that he made about the Jews. And I think that I tried to be scrupulously fair in saying everybody says something stupid. The problem really is in the confluence of telling choices that Hagel has made. Clearly, he has an issue with Israel. Is it a point of view on the spectrum of views in national security, or does he really have a problem with the Jewish state? I can't answer that question. Mm-hmm. I know Chuck Hagel because he was elected when I was working on the Hill. I understand many of the concerns about him, some of which haven't been expressed by those who used to work with him. Is he an anti-Semite? I don't know. I sure as hell hope not.
Well, Heather, let me pick up on what Danielle said. I mean, it seems to me that there's a difference between having a problem with the Israeli state and disagreeing with some of the Israeli policies. How do you see Chuck Hagel's comments? And he said a number of things over the years.
Look, I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, first, the Jewish community in Nebraska, which knows him well, the folks at the USO when Chuck Hagel was working at the Veterans Department in charge of the USO, have said very positive things about him. His Jewish colleagues have said the idea that the man is a personal anti-Semite is ridiculous. And frankly, anti-Semitism is a very serious thing, and it really demeans that kind of very dangerous and frightening prejudice to toss it around for this. So that's one point. Point two is there has to be a difference between criticizing the actions of a government and having a problem with the existence of a state, because if there isn't, then neither Danielle nor I is very patriotic, because we've each savagely criticized the actions of a government, our own government, at different times in the past, but we both love our country very deeply. And so this there's been a deliberate effort to conflate having a variety of opinions about the wisdom of actions by any given Israeli government and the wisdom of different ways it tries to pursue its relationships in the region with the U.S. with some kind of idea that you have a problem with the state. And that is really noxious and a problem for, you know, actually being able to have the kind of discourse and argument that Danielle and I were both just saying we want to be able to have about drones, for example.
But, Heather, I don't agree with you entirely that this has been an effort to conflate the two. You know, this is the standard defense of people who spend a lot of time criticizing Israel for whatever reason, is that, oh, you can't criticize Israel without being called an anti-Semite. Well, no, you can criticize Israel, and I and you do all the time, as do many others who are great supporters of the right of the Jewish state to exist. I think the problem here is a suspicion that there is something more than that, as indicated by several statements he's made. Now, I don't know if you know Chuck Hagel, that you can assert so strongly what he is or isn't. Perhaps you do, in which case I'm very happy to hear you say that. But as for getting the endorsement of Jewish senators or not, you know, it's kind of like getting the endorsement of the state of Israel. I couldn't care less. You know, these questions have to be asked.
Go ahead, Heather.
No. The last is actually a completely fair point, Danielle. But the other point, I do think, you know, I don't know the senator. I do have Nebraska roots, and so I look at what does the Nebraska Jewish community say, and those are people who've, you know, had reason to watch him operate up close, who've seen him off the record, and who have issued very strong statements in his support. And so that's where, and you know, frankly, I there's part of me that I want to judge people based on how they behave and not sort of pretend that I know what any of us thinks when we go home at night and sit down and pour ourselves a scotch.
Well, on that
that's
note,
all we can do.
That's all we can do. Well, I'm looking forward to those hearings, as I'm sure you are as well, and hopefully our listeners as well. And I do appreciate the fact that you both joined us today in Radio Times. A very interesting discussion, and we'll have you back sometime. Danielle Pletka, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, Heather Hurlburt, thank you very much as well.
Always good to be here.
And she's the Executive Director of the National Security Network. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowen. Stay with us, though. We'll be right back.